Hey, I'm George Chen.
And I'm Paco Romain.
And you're listening to SupDoc.
On SupDoc, we talk to interesting people with strong opinions about their favorite docs.
Today, we're going to be talking about the 1981 documentary Of Muppets and Men.
Of Muppets and Men is a behind-the-scenes look at the making of the seminal comedy show, The Muppet Show.
So, right now, John Schauble. Hi.
Hey, guys.
Hi, John.
Hey.
Welcome to San Francisco.
I'm so happy to be here.
I love your beret.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I wear it in a jaunty fashion.
You do.
To the side.
Your San Francisco beret.
They're lying. There's no hats. Come on, George.
Thank you for coming. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Sup, Doc.
This is the third podcast I've ever done.
Well, you're really good at it.
Thanks. I'm working. Yeah.
What were the other hard. Two? Well, who was our competition?
One was Mr. Matt O'Brien.
Oh, yeah,
I did
yeah.
his rehash podcast. I don't know if he still does that.
He's a funny guy.
He's a great guy.
I love that guy.
Is it a Vine one of the podcast? Best.
No, it's a Twitter podcast.
I like the idea that he just does a podcast on Vine.
His
Vines
just
are great, though.
Getting away from it, but he does like so much. He has like a talk show that he does, like a 5-minute talk show that he does on the subway, which is really funny too.
Oh, wow.
So he just interviews someone like in front of like a mother of two. Like it's pretty funny. And then I did my friend John Shefsky's podcast, which has yet to be released, called
gotcha.
Three-Headed Beast. Two-headed beast, three-headed beast.
Is that the name? Does the name have the question mark in it like that?
No, that's my it's in my intonation because I can't remember what it was called.
Are we the first American podcast you've done?
No, John's would have been the first one.
Oh, is this the first podcast you've done in my living room?
I actually did Matt O'Brien's podcast, oddly enough, in Paco's living room. Did you not wonder why the door was kicked in that way?
I was wondering why there was fresh maple syrup all over the place.
Everything's sticky in here.
It's super sticky.
We're getting some weird stereotypes right now.
Just
Canadian
stereotype.
Maple.
Just to establish, John is a Canadian.
Woo! Oh, yeah, he is Canadian.
Yeah.
Welcome to America.
Born and raised. I've almost been here for 3 years now. Three years in August.
Well, you're basically American.
Right? But tell the government.
Yes, we'll try to tell. We have a lot of diplomatic ties, this podcast.
Finally.
So we, meaning you, picked what documentary for us to watch?
It's called Of Muppets and Men. Mm-hmm. It was from 1962. I think?
No,
am I not even close?
No, I think 1981.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I watched so much Muppet stuff in lieu of that.
I think you're killing George, by the way.
Yeah, like your anachronisms are killing me.
Coughs, laughs, I'll take whatever noise I
can get. I knew Canada was a little bit behind, but come on.
I thought they made it during the second year of the Muppet Show. The fifth year?
Fifth season,
yeah. But it started in 62?
76 is what I saw on Wikipedia is when the Muppet Show came out.
Muppet Show started in 76, and this was made in 81.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, no, because 69 was when Sesame Street started.
Yeah.
Was when they stopped doing the test shows. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Maybe?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Either way, I loved it.
You're an expert on the Muppets is what we're trying to get to.
I'm not about the dates. I'm all about the felt.
Yeah. So I just want to say that I love the fact that you picked this because one of the defining shows of my life was The Muppet Show.
It's the best clean comedy, I think.
Yeah.
It's childish, but there's violence and sarcasm and just like Kermit the Frog, if you watch him, is the most sarcastic.
Super sarcastic.
Almost to the point of being really rude all the time.
Yeah. Well, he's got a show to run.
Yeah. He's a showrunner.
He doesn't have time for that.
If honestly, we are all closest to Fozzie Bear, I think, in a comedic sense. And if anyone had to deal with us, I would assume that they would be very mad all the time.
Yeah, I would think so.
I'm closest to a Gelfling of anything.
Okay. That makes sense.
Deep cut.
Yeah. But, so you chose this documentary, which is made by them, basically. It's a behind the scenes about the making of the TV show, which I didn't realize how many people, how international the staff was.
Yeah.
There's a lot of. One thing I was doing a little digging, I didn't realize that Frank Oz was born in England and his parents were puppeteers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they emigrated to Oakland. So he grew up in Oakland.
Oh, I didn't know
that's
that.
Cool.
This crazy
local
thing. Like Frank Oz comes from puppetry lineage.
Huh.
He's like a second generation puppeteer.
Wow.
And then he joined up with Henson when he was 19.
And he didn't even want to be a puppeteer. He wanted to be a journalist. And then he ended up doing a lot of directing, which he kind of fell into and liked, I think, a little bit more mm-hmm. than doing puppetry.
I didn't know that. I didn't. I love Frank Oz. The guy's a freaking genius. I mean, Jim Henson, obviously, genius.
It's whenever anyone asks me to like that's the who could you have dinner with, living or dead question. It's Jim Henson, hands down, every single time. Uh-huh. I can't even imagine picking that guy's brain and like just getting inside his head. It would be so interesting.
Henson, yeah. I mean, I think watching their dynamic together, just that first scene in the doc, is them doing Kermit and Fozzie, and I just realized like. That it gets me because it's a little bit like that should be like, you know, like Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner. You know?
Yeah,
like they're just like they're such like buddies.
Yeah.
And they do all this stuff together. It's the core of it is those guys because they were Bert and Ernie.
Yeah.
Before this even happened. They were Bert and Ernie.
It's puppetry odd couple mm-hmm. is essentially what their dynamic is, which makes it. It works in on every level, I think.
Oh, wow.
It's you have one straight guy yeah. and one goofy guy and you can do. You can do whatever you want.
That is the like cornerstone of duo comedy.
Yes, Laurel and Hardy. Yeah. It's any all the Marx Brothers put together, I guess.
Yes,
I
really
Tim know. And Eric. You know the classics.
Yeah, all the classics.
All the classic formats of
yeah,
duos.
Exactly. But I think because I'm not on it. Like this show is about documentaries, and I'm not the biggest documentary fan in general.
This show's
and,
over.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming.
I will qualify it though, but. The reason is, and the reason why I picked this one is because I think overall that I find documentaries to shed a negative light on things. Hmm. When you look at something like Blackfish or Food Inc.,
right?
It's just, hey, these things are bad. This is what they're doing is wrong. Like anything like sort of anti-government or anti like commerce, mm-hmm. Whatever. But this one. It was a behind the scenes look at essentially a family at work, and I loved the fact that Jim Henson kept talking about everything he said was positive.
Yeah,
every person was an integral part of the show and part of the family, as he kept calling it. And I think that's what I like about a documentary that can go behind the scenes, but in a positive way, I think.
Sure.
Right.
Well, you also don't see, we were talking about this on a previous podcast about the documentary Comedian. Mm-hmm. You don't see a lot of documentaries that are behind the scenes, kind of how does the show get put together? What are the machinations? What are the mechanisms that are behind that?
That was one of the best things is to when they were showing all the wide shots of them underneath the
so
puppets
cool.
or
yeah.
Frank Oz inside of a couch. Like that's the stuff you never see. You unless you're on the set, there's no way you would ever see
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And that's interesting.
It's definitely not an expose. You know, it's like from the internal perspective. That's one thing with Seinfeld too. And it's like the subject is also like, I'm the producer of it.
Right.
It's a different type of thing. That's what came up with The Sheik also.
Yeah.
Like they're not trying to be gotcha journalism at all. And it's also like, who wants to look at the dark side of the Muppets? I feel like no. The dark side has all happened since he passed away, I feel
yeah.
like.
Oh, yeah. I can, well, that's the thing is like Frank Oz leaving and then other people taking over and just changing, I think, the way things were. I wonder what the dark side would be in there. I don't even know if you could, like, how is there a dark side to the Children's Television Workshop?
Yeah. I mean, there's got to be some.
Well, there's another documentary about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. There's 12 minutes.
Anytime you have a creative group together, there are political infights and there's dark sides, but like they just seem like such lovely hippies.
Yeah.
You know, Jim Henson is so soft spoken, so beautiful in the way he gave people their props, like you're saying, so positive. And also, the man wore shirts that had ties that were made out of the same material.
Yeah.
I mean, that person's never a bad person.
No. Yeah. Which was so, I started watching a behind the Sesame Street thing, and it was so funny because when the Children's Television Workshop brought in Henson, he walked in like shirtless in a leather vest with sandals on, and they thought that he was like a Unabomber until they were like, no, this is the puppeteer that we want to work with.
He was shirtless with just a vest on.
Yeah, they were just like, he walked in with a leather vest.
Wow.
So I don't know.
I feel like in 2015, we treat puppeteers as a lower class citizen for sure, like in the realm of like mimes and prop comics.
Yeah.
Like I don't see new people doing much puppet stuff. I know it's a Bay Area. There's probably a mime and a puppet and
they're
a
kicking around
that
somewhere.
Are like around and they would take offense to this. But I think like it's considered to be a hacky form in this day and age. I think, like, there must have been... And he's not really doing ventriloquism. I think that's the main distinction.
Well, I was going to... Yes. That's what I was... The point I was just going to make. There's a distinction between ventriloquism and puppeteering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the Muppets were definitely puppeteering.
Yeah.
It's. I think that the main difference is because for ventriloquism, you have to create a character other than yourself. But for puppeteering, that Jim Henson, they say that Kermit was just an extension of who he was, just maybe a little bit more brash, right?
Yeah.
So he got to put all of himself into this character, whereas, yeah, you have to create something else that's not you, that's totally outside you that you can play off of.
So let's go back. So did you grow up watching the Muppets?
Oh yeah, like 100%. Fraggle Rock probably I guess Sesame Street probably first, and then Fraggle Rock, and then really got into the Muppets and the Caper and Take Manhattan, and then
the movies.
Yeah, yeah. Still to this day probably my favorite movie of all times is called Muppet Family Christmas. Have you guys ever seen that one?
Yes.
I think so. Who's Scrooge in that? Is it
No, not the Christmas Carol, which I also really like. That was actually a reboot that Brian Henson did after they tried to reboot it after Jim Henson died, and I think that's the best one of the Brian Henson era. But Muppet Family Christmas was it was probably in the 80s, and it was so basically all the Muppets go to Fozzie's mom's house, like her farmhouse, nice. And then they like go there for Christmas. And then they find all of Sesame Street caroling, so they come into the house, and then they go downstairs, and Fraggle Rock is down there.
Oh, it's a
so
crossover.
All of them everywhere
was
all the time.
Was Fonzie on this, too?
He should have been. There was only one human, and it was Doc from Fraggle Rock.
Oh, wow.
Just one person, yeah.
And
then the Gelfling showed up.
And then
I wish that they would have had that, and then all the Labyrinth guys show up, and Yoda walks in with a tray of
Bowie
muffins.
Sings the night before Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
So growing up in Canada, Muppets were on the air on just like children's television.
Yeah, well, we was PBS, Public Broadcasting System. So, so we had. And we also had our own specific, I think I was talking to you about this before, George, about we had our own specific Canadian version of Sesame Street called Sesame Park.
Oh.
Where it was a couple different characters, but they would play it, they would intercut it with a Sesame Street episode or play it right after. And they would teach you like the French counting and French letters and things like that. Mm-hmm. So there were, what was his name?
Your weird way you guys do division. That's totally different than how we do division.
There's no way that is accurate. What? How do we do division?
We'll draw it out later.
The Canadian
division. Not good for a podcast. It's not going to make sense.
You guys want to see some long division, right? Please put in the comments.
Instead of the brackets, you guys have hockey sticks. I think that's what...
That's what it is.
Yeah.
It looked like a hockey stick.
It does look like a hockey stick.
Do you guys not have that?
We don't have hockey sticks yet.
I can't even wait to see how you guys long divide.
It's pretty cool.
I'm just
saying it's American, dude.
Well, sure.
Yeah,
it's an oppressive way. Yeah. We're holding those fours down, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We divided up the land.
So in this documentary, like what compels you about this documentary? I mean, what is it that you love so much about it?
I think it is going back to the behind the scenes and seeing that, because I love the characters of the Muppets, but I want to see who's behind them, who created them, and how kind of how they work and how they look. And because you get to see when you watch like someone like Frank Oz do Fozzie, you kind of don't realize that his hands, he's putting his hands in Fozzie's hands. And so the mannerism in which he speaks is actually how Frank Oz would speak. So you're actually watching this person, the motions that they would go through in everyday speech pattern, but you don't really realize it. And then you see the human being in there.
Yeah.
And then it kind of all clicks together. And I don't know if that ruins it or not, but I do like to see the underneath of it.
As a child, it might have ruined things.
I think that's probably pretty accurate.
To see the ghost in the machine, you know, the guy behind the curtain kind of thing.
Yeah. No, you can't want to do that.
I mean, I find the hands are so much more expressive than, say, for example.
Oh boy, here we go.
Well, he's got a prop, people.
He's got a puppet.
What does
when
he have?
Got a ventriloquist.
Only
got.
Oh man,
like
his
this
mouth
up
is...
and down motion, and like
oh,
the hands really
what's he,
get
this
into
ventriloquist
a more...
doll. George, is blood red. His mouth is blood red.
It is kind of that is the wait.
Is that the doll from the Goosebumps book?
I don't know what this one comes from, but like you can do a lot with this. It's got no okay. This is great for a podcast that I brought a puppet to a podcast, but just, yeah, like the personality of the hands in the mouth. Like, when you think about how much he can do with Kermit's mouth,
yeah,
it's just all pure hand. Like, a dummy slash marionette, you've just got this kind of, like, maybe up-down mouth motion, and, you know, yeah, the more elaborate ones might have, like, eyebrow action or something.
Yeah, a couple of eye movements, but, yeah, that's just, like, slack-jawed, up and down.
Yeah.
Ginger. It's so expressive when you can get your whole hand in there, and that's, yeah, what the Henson fist or whatever, like, yeah, the way that he did puppetry was so unique.
Yeah, yeah.
What? Why do you have that?
This is also a good question.
Yeah.
Because I just thought it'd be fun to bring a puppet to our puppet.
No, we know why you brought it, but why do you have it?
Oh, this belongs to another comedian, and we did this bit the other day, which was Lena and Jeff Dunham. So it was like Lena Dunham bringing out a puppet that we called Jeff Dunham,
and then
the Jeff Dunham puppet would do Jeff Dunham jokes.
Oh,
and Lena would be
funny.
Like, I apologize for my little brother, Jeff.
And then she only paid him $60 for 45 minutes?
It's something along those lines, yeah. No, actually, there's more to it. I'll send you the script sometime. We might do it again.
That's
so
funny.
Anyway, I thought it'd be fun to bring a thing that would give us all an excuse to do another voice also during a Muppets thing.
Pass it around.
Yeah.
He looks
like
a
hillbilly. It's like the bong. I'm putting the puppet on the table. It's like in that 70s show. It's the bong in the center of the table.
And then it looks all the way.
This is great podcasting, by the way. Yeah. This is great audio
work. This is the sound of a ventriloquist puppet's head hitting the microphone.
Bam, cut it out! Cut it out, Paco!
Well, I don't know if I'll cut it out.
Having that in my room at night would
so
scare
spooky.
Me. To walk around a corner and see that when you're trying to go to the bathroom. I would lose it.
It's so weird.
But yeah, like, I've noticed that thing. Like, when I think of Kermit, I think of his hands are on two sticks, usually.
Yes.
So it's just, it's so expressive, just the mouth.
Yeah.
And, like, the eyes don't blink. Most of them, the eyes don't blink.
His deflated, anguish face where he sucks in his cheeks.
That's what it, when he collapses his fist, that to me is Jim Henson's puppetry. It's just like a sheepish look. One crunched up face of a Muppet.
Do you think they could replicate that today, the Muppet Show for kids, and have the same impact?
I think they are rebooting.
Well, they're rebooting.
They're rebooting
ABC.
The Muppet Show. I am interested to see how it will be. It was funny because I was reading like quotes from Frank Oz about why he didn't get into the new Muppet movies.
Oh right.
And he didn't think that the script was progressive enough. He thought it was too retro, and he thought that the Muppets were cutting edge and should continue to push the envelope. So he didn't think that they were going far enough, which is...
In Takes Manhattan?
No, in the new ones,
the
like the Jason Segel ones.
Oh.
Because
they
asked him...
Those are fluffy...
They had a rap in it, for God's sakes. Like,
yeah.
I didn't see the second one. First one, I gave it a pass. I checked it out in theater, and
yeah,
I was like, you know what? I have so much goodwill for this franchise that I'm willing to go along.
Same. I did the same.
And, like, I was, like, recognizing, okay, it's going to be this new Apatow flavor type Muppet thing. And
yeah.
Just going in knowing that. I thought they handled it well. But it's interesting, yeah, not having Frank Oz be involved seems like such a blow.
I took my ex-girlfriend's 5-year-old and 7-year-old to go see that, and they were bored.
Yeah.
So, like, that tells you something. Like, and
I went with someone who was, like, I think, like, 26 at the time and did not. She was like, I guess this is for your generation.
Oh, snap.
So, which is also true. I was going to say also, I remember... Very distinctly, that Raquel Welch spider dance. That was
too.
A formative moment in a young man's life.
That's the thing. It's like,
me too.
What you bring in like Ty Burrell to do a crappy Russian accent or whatever for the new ones, and then you have Raquel Welch, and the guy in the spider costume was like an actual Russian ballet dancer.
Yeah.
Like from their national ballet company.
Yeah.
To do a spider. And like, I just, the care that they used to put into it.
Right. Right.
Versus the entertainment factor that they now put into it, I think is so different.
That's why I wonder if that would be the real dark side of it, is what was there some financial point where they're just like, this is too expensive to make, we need to stop.
Well,
but there was so much merchandising there.
Yeah.
It had to be such
a
huge empire. I don't see how it's just unfortunately the fact that he died. I feel like he would have kept a very strong hold on the quality.
He sold it to Disney before he died.
Okay.
Which,
well, he knew he was sick, though, right?
He, I don't know if that was the cause, but he was, yeah, probably, he was pretty sick at the time. What? But he did the, sorry, he did the 3D Disneyland ride before, he was working on that before he passed
and
away.
And what year did Jim Henson pass away?
90,
yeah.
It was early 90s.
Yeah, he was 53.
Jeez, that is way too young.
I can't, I wonder what the Empire would be like now.
This is a weird segue, and we'll get back to the documentary, sure. But there was a time when I was driving down Mission Street in probably 99 or 2000 here in San Francisco, and I was watching as these guys on a giant billboard were replacing a Kermit billboard mm-hmm. with a, I think it was an Apple billboard that had Kermit, and they were replacing it with like maybe another Apple billboard that had Albert Einstein, and their faces were, it was half Kermit and half Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
They were getting rid of one and putting, and I had at that time wish I had had a camera.
Yeah.
Now I would have been able to take a picture of it, but it was so cool and startling to me and so neat. It was just one of the many Muppet things. I
wonder if you could find that same billboard, because I bet they're both still on there, just been pasted over. If you could go down layer by layer and pull that back out.
Yeah, it was like Mission in Fifth, so maybe somebody
knows. That was that Think Different campaign.
Yeah, like, the Think Different campaign. But this documentary, like, there's so much, because, like, again, like you said, when they go to the wide shots and they do the reveal of the puppeteers, and you realize that they are watching, so they're mirroring, it's a mirror effect, because they're watching monitors of themselves with their hands through a couch and these gigantic microphones and these gigantic cans that they have on there. Like, how difficult, the level of difficulty is so incredible.
Like, what your body has to do versus what you're watching versus what everyone else is seeing is all disconnected, and yet still has to be the same. Like, that to me, when you're speaking and you have to make your mouth move, but you're also using your other hand to, like, touch your face or make motions, but you're doing it in the opposite way. Like, that's crazy how much your mind has to work for that.
And then maybe sing in a character's voice.
Yes.
As well.
It's baffling how talented they are.
Yeah, there's a one woman who was trying to do, like, two different characters with each hand, and she kind of talked about how she couldn't get it right. I'm like, oh, that's like, it's like drummers, or it's like being like performing a Steve Reich piece or something. It's like, you know, like, you have to do these two different tempos or something like that. It's really is like a lot of coordination. It's there's also some full body puppets that they didn't get into the details of. I mean, like your Big Birds and
Big Birds, like, and your full Snuffy
encased body puppets. But I remember watching the Muppet movie as a kid, and just when they'd show the scenes of, like, I didn't even get this one joke, like there's a scene in the Muppet movie where Kermit's feet are shown, and
is where he's riding the bike.
Where he's riding the bike.
That scares the hell out of me.
He's dancing.
It scares me so much.
Wait, what does?
When Kermit rides a bike?
It does. Why?
It scares me.
It's like, how do they do
that? I don't know how they did it.
It's creepy.
Yeah. I was like, I don't, there's, it's a huge fixed gear bicycle. There's, you can't see any strings. There's nobody on set. Like, it makes me crazy. There's no green screen in that era too.
Yeah.
Whew.
It's weird. Yeah, like, I didn't think about it. It's a fixed gear.
Yeah.
He's a fixed
gear. I can't
He's
ride a fixed gear bicycle. I am a human.
Yeah, right.
With bones and stuff.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I thought it was maybe a thing where, like, the pedals are moving his knees for him. But there's a bit in that they reference in Of Muppets and Men, which is he's supposed to be tap dancing.
Oh, yeah.
And then just the camera just keeps focusing on his face, and there's just a bunch of camera effects on his face, but you never see his feet, and it's hilarious. That's one of those jokes I wouldn't have picked up on as a kid.
Yeah.
Then now it's just, that's so funny.
Yeah. This is how I tap dance, and just never show his
never
feet.
Show it at all.
So silly.
Yeah. Those guys were so, and they did a show a week. That's something I didn't know. I didn't realize that they did a show a week. That's like, well, first of all, Saturday Night Live levels, and also so much better than Saturday Night Live. Both a variety show.
Yeah.
Both done in a week. Obviously not filmed live, you know, the Muppet Show, but still, like.
Yeah. Plus they were doing stuff for Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Plus they were still doing Sesame Street on the side.
They were doing, were they doing guest appearances on Saturday Night Live? What were they doing?
They would do the, what was it, Gorth? They had, like, this other land, and they were monsters that would come out of a, like a file cabinet. It was really weird, but they and they would just have, like, conversations about what was happening.
I love the 70s, early 80s esoteric metaphysical comedy that they would do on television at that time.
Do you think that was like because it was a post-hippie era?
Yeah.
And like that sensibility like just bled into
There was an intellectualism TV. Behind it. There was actual a studied intellectualism behind comedy at that time. I mean, the fact that Steve Martin was selling out arenas in 79 with a guy that put an arrow through his head and stuff, like that just tells you what a crazy era that was. To have the Muppet Show be debuting at like number one.
Yeah.
And Miss Piggy being on the cover of People magazine.
A number of magazines, like a sex symbol of sorts, which is so weird to me.
Yeah.
It's like when they put like Marge Simpson like in sexy, it's just like,
yeah,
I kind of like it.
And a lot of people do. That is a common thing, I think.
I get it. That's not real, but I get what's happening.
I remember this is something I don't think I've ever told anyone. So
you're welcome.
Well, exclusive.
But I remember having a crush on Bugs Bunny's girlfriend when they were doing the Robin Hood cartoon.
Yeah.
When they were Bugs was Robin Hood, I think.
Yeah.
And he had there was a girl involved.
Daffy was Little John and Porky was Friar right. Tuck.
Yeah.
You're
going to say that you really liked Babs Bunny. Babs Bunny is
Babs Tiny Toons.
Tiny Toons. But didn't or just the transvestite Bugs Bunny.
I think it was the transvestite Bugs Bunny.
Yeah, yeah.
That you had.
Rockin' bod.
Yeah. A lot of rockin'. Women, I think this has come up in other areas, a lot of women are really into that Disney Robin Hood Fox.
Oh, man, that is...
Oh, no. Oh, my God. That's who it was. It was the Robin Hood Fox, not the Bugs Bunny.
The Maid Marian one?
Yes.
The Maid Marian.
My wife loves the Robin Hood Fox.
A lot of people love that Robin Hood Fox. A lot of girls have that as like an early... Like it's like the Han Solo thing or something.
Because there's a woman fox. In
yeah. His love interest.
That's who I was really digging at that.
She was beautiful. She wore a lot of like see-through fabrics, not to like her bodice, but just like flowy,
super flowy.
Yeah, flowy.
We've created a generation of furries.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's probably a lot of kids growing up masturbating on their Kermit dolls too, or something. Not that I did.
Okay, sorry. In the vein of that, this is what I really loved about Kermit is that he was the biggest commitment phobe.
Oh, yeah.
They talked of... I was watching this one clip on The Muppet Show, and someone came up, and they're like, hey, I heard you're marrying Miss Piggy. And he's like, no, I'm not, no.
Yeah, no, yeah they're congratulating on his engagement.
Yeah.
Literal side piece.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, no, we're not, no, nope. We are not doing that. And I was like, this guy is so afraid of marrying this woman.
Yeah.
Or this pig, I guess.
Yeah. That's where we get it.
Yeah, right. I want to know, let's go around the room. I want to know who you identified the most with in The Muppet Show. Wait, which character? Let's start with John.
Oh, man. I want to say Fozzie because he's a comic, but I think it's got to be like... Stantler and Waldorf.
Oh, wow.
Because they were just... What I loved is that they hated the show, and they were in the balcony, the most expensive seats for every single one. They just like bought the box, and they're like, well, we spent the money.
Yeah.
But I just thought they were the funniest and the most sarcastic and like the best... I thought they were some of the best written characters.
Oh, yeah.
So I think I liked them the best and thought of them.
Is it not true that they ended each... episode? Did they not get the last word in on?
Oh, I think they did.
Most likely.
The balcony joke at the end.
There was always a balcony
nice
joke.
Tag.
Then they'd go to the end.
They're also human. Of all the other, I think Scooter could be human. It's never clear what Scooter is. Bunsen Honeydew and Scooter are the closest to human.
Chef, I think, is he's technically human. He has actual human hands, also kind of scared me as a kid.
I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, it's
the only
one. Henson's hands.
Because he's actually handling all this like food.
Yeah, he has to like stir stuff and like grab rice or whatever he's doing. Yeah.
Okay, George?
I'm going to say I have been asked this question before years ago. And I said, I aspired to Rolf.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I've actually achieved Rolf.
Rolf the dog.
But I think Rolf is a good goal.
Yeah.
As a spirit Muppet, I think Rolf is a good
goal. With your spirit animal Muppet, it'd be Rolf.
It'd be Rolf.
I guess that's what I was at least aspiring to.
Is it because you grew up playing the piano? And
I didn't play the piano. It was because I think of him as being, he's like, you know, a little bit casual, but... He's just kind of like along for the ride.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, I'm just going to play something in the background. He just has this funny like little flop.
He
his
does
little head flop.
Is
yeah,
cute.
His ears are
he
his
cute
ears
little
are
head
fun.
Flop.
He does have a cute head flop. For me, it was always Kermit. I always loved Kermit the Frog, and I think watching that documentary, like one of my absolute favorite things to do is to produce shows.
Yeah,
and. I think it might go back to loving Kermit and watching him to be a showrunner.
He's the glue.
He is the glue. And I love doing that stuff as well.
Yeah, you're right. Like, there's sort of like not this sort of early period of meta stuff about show business. This is the most like specifically meta show business show, I think, as a kid that you can see.
Well, years before Larry Sanders, you know, it did the behind the scenes show of a show.
That's really accurate, actually. Like, it was like, yeah, puppet Larry Sanders, or Larry Sanders was a human Muppet show, I guess.
Yeah, that's, I think, more accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's such a good, I think that's so good, because, like, they did that, like, all the time, where they would screw up and, like, drop the curtain wrong.
Yeah.
And, like, nothing ever actually worked out well on the Muppet show. They always were doing it wrong.
Well, it was like civic theater, you know, it was like, you know, did any of them get paid?
I don't know.
Well, he ended up paying Scooter because he gave him $20 a week.
Which is funny because Scooter's uncle, I think, owned the theater.
Yeah.
This is also where I do think that the reboot movie does kind of make it about show business again.
Yeah.
So I think in that way, it's a little bit truer to, it's referencing back to the show in a way that maybe the movies didn't, like, it's like, we're going to go steal jewels in New York. It's like not the spirit of the show.
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, it feels like that movie, for all its flaws, feels reverent.
Yeah.
It definitely feels
definitely
reverent.
Definitely it's reverent. It's a little lazy writing when they had you have to raise money for your, it's been done.
That's been done forever.
I did like the angle that they were, it just had been, time had passed. But yeah, it just seemed sloppy.
Yeah.
It just seemed that what they were doing was easy, and they're like, okay, well, we'll make this into a huge number. And it's just like, yeah, but the dialogue still was sucky.
It just ends up being like a bunch of 80s jokes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Well, I mean, the original Muppet Show was obviously a vehicle for some really talented, genius-like comedians to espouse their thoughts and opinions and jokes.
Yeah.
You know, and then the newer ones are basically like, this is about a Muppet.
Yeah.
Like, well, no.
Once you start introducing all the new Muppet, like the new Muppet that was sort of a human, but that storyline didn't even make sense.
No.
Yeah.
He's like, he's my brother, but also he's felt.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
What? No, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Oh, so it just violates some sort of basic principles of the world that have never been explicit, because there's humans. There's like, why is Roger Moore talking to these guys?
Yes.
But there's sort of, I see what you're saying. Like, I have not gone back to, this has now become a critique of the Muppet reboot with Jason Segel.
Well, there's been so many reboots, because even the Muppets Tonight, when they brought in the, like, Arsenio Hall character, like the guy with the dreads, the purple guy.
That's to introduce that guy. Though.
Yeah, that was a whole new character, and he was awful.
Like
he was a terrible.
89?
Yeah, I think so. It was when I remember watching it with my parents, and they were really excited about it. And we weren't. Like, they thought it was going to be great, and then it wasn't.
And I did see that some of the Muppet stuff that was shot for that time period was shot in Toronto. I don't know why they chose to do that there. But.
I think because nobody wanted it here. The Muppet Show, they didn't want the Muppet Show, so they paired with BBC and then shot a bunch of it in Toronto and distributed it.
So it's sort of like it had become uncool at some point.
I think they didn't, what was I reading? It was like they didn't think, because after Sesame Street really made the Muppets popular, they didn't think that the show would work for a more adult audience. So BBC was the only people willing to pick it up and give it a try.
Yeah, the two pilots, they ran it by networks in America and they all passed. Mm-hmm. And then the BBC was like, oh, we'll take it on. And that's why they have a BBC director. You know, and they have the BBC, one of the writers who looks like Matt Lieb.
Oh, you mean the 70s show?
Yeah, the 70s show, yeah.
And then Fraggle Rock ended up getting picked up by HBO, or distributed by HBO, which is so...
That's incredible.
Yeah, which is crazy.
They somewhere I read that they intentionally made Fraggle Rock to be an international market sort of thing that could work internationally.
That makes sense, because it does.
Yeah, it was just songs about friendship and tolerance and learning. Like, it wasn't specific to really anything, but it was, I think it worked in every market.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
So I feel like the takeaway from a lot of this is that we all just wish like Jim Henson had been able to be around to steer the ship.
Yeah.
And maybe even his son felt that way.
I wonder what Brian Henson, like how he's aligned with the original Henson views. Mm-hmm. I wonder if he carries over what his father kind of thought and how it is progressive and but still very adult in its humor.
I feel like I went and saw the Muppet Show on stage, the musical.
Oh yeah,
at the ACT here in town, and Brian Henson was there, and all the
doing Kermit?
The old characters were not a part of it. There were new characters.
Oh okay.
But it was live, and they were watching monitors. You got to see them do it. I mean, they're all dressed in show black, but like,
yeah.
You got, and then they had a Q&A afterwards.
Did you like it? Was it a good show?
I thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
Because, I've always been a huge fan of the Muppets, and I love puppeteers. And, yeah, it was really cool. And everything they did was backwards. So they walked backwards. When the puppets were going forward, they were walking backwards so they could watch the monitor, which had them backwards.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
So they had to turn their hand around that way?
That's facing the audience with their back facing the audience, watching the monitor that showed them from the front. But they had the huge monitor so the audience could see them as well do it. So that was part of the show. And then it was kind of improv as well. So it was an improv show, and they had these characters that what was the name of, I wrote it down, the characters that were that you could just put eyes on.
Oh, the
blank ones. They had a bunch of those on stage. Whatnots?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds about right.
And they had a bunch of those on stage on like bleacher seating, and they would run and grab them, and then stick some eyes on them and stuff, and some hair, and then they would come and be part of the scene.
I hope that's what the new Muppet Show is more improvised, because I think that is the new level of comedy. Yeah. I think that's the way shows are going anyway. Like you look at the league, it's like mostly improvised shows and things like that. And I think that would be the best way to take it.
There is a show going, it's Undateable. I think it's going to be live.
Oh, they're doing a live one?
A live season.
Like it's a whole season?
It's going to be taped live.
Because they did a couple of 30 Rocks live.
Right.
As well. And I think that's fun. I think that's a whole lot of fun.
Although I've always said I knew how to fix Saturday Night Live by just not making it live.
Their film sketches are the best ones.
Yeah, exactly.
If you did them all like that.
Yeah. And if people had time to rehearse a little bit and memorize some lines and not stare at cue cards the entire time.
Yeah.
But I do want to talk for a second about the new ABC show that you brought up.
Yeah.
Do you want to run us through that a little bit? How much do you know about
that? I don't know much about it. I've really only heard about it in the past couple of weeks, but I don't know who's involved and what the level of involvement in the actual Muppet House is going to be.
I think it's Brian Henson is bringing it, and it's supposed to be geared for adults. It's, I think, going to be at night.
It's like a prime time.
It's prime time.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I just hope they do it
right.
Right. Was he not involved in the new Muppet movie?
I'm going to have to say yes, I think, because I feel like it all that runs to the Henson
estate. Yeah, he's the CEO. Yeah.
And anything they do Muppet-wise probably goes through him. It seems like at the Q&A that I saw, a lot of times he talked about the respect that he had for his dad and that the show and the Muppets in general and trying to keep all of that alive.
Yeah.
So hopefully the ABC show won't dumb it down. And it's like, it's not a, it's, you know, it's one of those things where satire is really tough for American audiences.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? And so, like, it's like nowadays people are like, oh, it's all about the Muppets. It's like, no, it's about the message.
Yeah.
It's not about the Muppets.
They're, you know, making...
They're a vehicle.
They want to, yeah, they want to give you behind the scenes look at show business or whatever they want to do. I wonder if they would take it in a more political direction.
That would be
direction.
Amazing.
Would be so, again, that would be so interesting to see, like, Fozzie talking about these real time like issues that the country's having.
I don't even.
Well, I just to answer the question, I just checked on what Wikipedia has to say. The announcement that was just made the other day, the primetime TV series, co-curated by Bill Prady and Bob Kuschel, directed by Randall Einhorn. Don't know what all of that means, but they also had a bunch of shorts on Disney that were came out this year.
All right, so Disney still owns.
Yeah, they own it. Yeah.
Right.
So that's
Bill Prady was commissioned to write the script for the Muppet Show pilot with the working title Muppets 2015. That's what this show probably is.
That's a terrible name. But so,
well, I mean, that's not that was a working title.
But it's going to have the Disney like film on it.
Right, because ABC is owned by Disney, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's all within the Disney vertical.
I don't know how I feel about this,
because
they're a money factory.
Yeah.
They're not about the creative integrity of the Muppets. They're about, hey, can we pump this franchise to kids now? It's taking it in the Frozen direction, and let's get some hit songs.
It being political is probably not going to happen.
Probably not.
At least they're not going to do it. They're not going to do a CGI Muppets, because that would be the worst thing to do at this point. I mean, that's what I wonder about now. Like, is it still probably cheaper to make a Muppet show in the traditional fashion than it would be to just completely animate it? Because animation costs so much money. But
true. But once you like build the characters, you can use them as much as you want.
Right.
And it's not. I don't know. I think for time wise, I think puppets are so much more, because you might have to do 20 or 30 takes before like your arm doesn't show up or you get the mouthing right or anything like that. But you, in CGI, you just set up the scene and you let it run and then you render it.
Yeah.
So, it's definitely not a situation like the George Lucas thing where it's like, well, if he had CGI in like 1978, he would have made all these terrible choices. Like it seems like Jim Henson was all about, and that's what's so cool about things like the Dark Crystal, right? It's the actual physical effects are what's so cool about it.
Yeah.
And like once you, and this has almost turned into, watching this made me also like think about just how there can be good CGI, I'm sure, but
absolutely.
This idea of this tradition going away is very sad.
Yeah, about like actual puppeteers. Mm-hmm. It's a dying art. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of schools like the Henson Institute. They do a lot of puppetry, but I don't know anything other than that that would offer even puppetry classes.
Yeah. Well, shit, there's a comedy club, I think, in New York that's going to have hologram stand-up comics.
That doesn't make sense to me.
So, I mean...
Good. Now Bill Hicks is getting booked, and I'm getting bumped off for hologram.
You're
Bill Hicks.
You're going to be bumped by Mitch Hedberg.
It's going to be the worst.
Yeah, that's just too bad. I'd like to dive into the drug-induced Dr. Teeth band for a second.
Oh, man.
And how much you guys enjoyed them.
It's so funny when you look at that band, how much, even when you look at Sam and Friends, which is what Kermit started as. He didn't start as a frog. He started as just kind of like a faceless guy, and then he was with this like jazz cat bald guy. And they would talk about stuff was so groovy, and they were like always bopping and stuff like that. And I think that translates into the Electric Mayhem, where those guys are on so many drugs. There's no doubt that those guys are so, like, when you look at Janice and she's like, oh my God,
Janice is so stoned.
Yeah, she's ripped.
Yeah.
Like,
do you think it was based on a real band? The Dr. Teeth band, or is it just...
I thought it was Dr. John, kind of, a little bit.
A little bit.
Not
maybe.
Really.
Was Janice like Janice Joplin? I guess she probably wasn't. Maybe namesake-wise, but...
Animal just is every...
I mean, he's Bonham, right? Isn't that John Bonham, Animal?
Probably, yeah. But with both arms, I guess. John Bonham has one arm, right?
No, that's the Def Leppard guy.
Cool. Yeah. I'm a real music buff over here.
My favorite, though, has got to be Floyd Pepper, like the sax player or the guitar player. And like, I love that he makes an appearance in this documentary.
The things that he said was really interesting about... He's like, I don't want to play this crap over and over and over.
He needs something that grooves.
And again, you look at how that is so reflective of creative culture that
right.
Jim Henson wants to talk about. He's like, I want to do something different all the time. I don't want to be doing the same thing over and over and over.
And I love how he's humming the Muppet Show theme to Kermit, and Kermit starts grooving
he
on it.
He loves it.
Because
he's
so
yeah.
old school.
Yeah.
You know? And then he says, Floyd Pepper says that he's got a permanent room in the home for the chronically groovy.
Yeah. They talk about being super groovy, like, all the time. Like, they're, and the stuff, like, they're, the psychedelic stuff they paint on the bus the Muppet movie.
Oh, the movie. Yeah, that movie. I think I watched that in Star Wars, like, so much growing up.
Yeah.
Like, the Muppet movie in Star Wars. Animal also has such a huge part in the Muppet movie, actually.
Yeah. He is a huge part of the Muppets in general. It just becomes...
Oh, we didn't even talk about Muppet Babies.
That show, I never really got into that. That was almost too young for me, maybe?
Yeah, that sounds right. Because people I talk to that are like in their 20s, when I'm like, you probably don't even care about the Muppets. And like, oh, well, Muppet Babies.
That was... And there was like... There were some other syndicated stuff. There was a Muppet show, and then there was a Dozer's show from Fraggle Rocks that was animated.
Oh, okay.
Right. That scene, though, with Lee Marvin and Animal in the documentary, where he's talking about, like, just relax and, like, it comes through your toes.
Chill out, man.
Chill out. Animal cracks me up, man.
Was that Lee Marvin? Oh, you're right. It was Lee Marvin. I thought it was David Carradine because of the context or something.
Oh, right. Yeah, I know. Yeah. It was Lee Marvin. The guest sets. Do you have a particular favorite guest set?
I think John Cleese is probably the ultimate guest from The Muppet Show, because his refusal to be a part of their antics, I think he's such a great antithesis to everything that they do. Like, he's just straight-laced all the time, and he's just like, I'm not going to do this. And that was almost every sketch of his. They were like,
that was a running gag.
Yeah. But like that, I've seen a number of sketches like that where they're like, okay, so we're going to have you wear a dress. And he's like, no, you are not. He's like, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because that's what made him famous in the Monty Python stuff, was doing Ministry of Silly Walks.
Yeah.
And,
which is still funny, because he would do the silly walk, but it would be in a ministry format, so he was still very structured when he was even when he was doing the silliest stuff. Mm-hmm. I think he was probably my favorite, or maybe Carol Burnett.
Oh,
and
yeah,
she's just my favorite of anything ever.
I'm gonna go the Raquel Welch. Definitely did some stuff, but
she's super sexy.
I don't remember like all. I guess it did 5 seasons. Is that how many? There was?
5 or 6.
Yeah,
five.
Yeah. Okay. So there's probably some stuff that. There was definitely memories I have of visual memories of certain people, like just 70 celebrities. I can't remember.
Well, there's Dolly. I remember Dolly Parton being on, and John Denver being on, and the Linda Ronstadt.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Country. You're loving the country.
Great. Blue Bayou was nice.
Oh, that was a huge one. That when they showed that whole production and that whole scene that they had built for one sketch.
That's great.
It probably took them months to set that up and build that and get it ready, and then boom, one song done.
Yeah.
Tear
I also
it down.
Think live music in television doesn't happen now anymore, other than contests. Like the fact that they had people doing, even if it's a bunch of puppets as your background singers, it's probably lip synced, but it's just presenting music in that way. I mean, variety shows just aren't happening anymore.
No.
Variety shows were very 70s, though.
I guess you have SNL and they put musical guests on there, but that's not in the context of the show.
Right.
It's like here's some sketches, here's some music. But that's the great thing about The Muppet Show, is that they would put it. They're like, okay, well, now you know how you have background singers? Now it's like 4 horses.
Yeah.
Like, they were just like, we're going to do puppets for your singers now.
Well,
instead.
And it shows their brilliance, too, that they realized that format was going to work throughout. I mean, they started with that format and they ended with that format. They didn't change it, you know, at some point where they're like, we should have real people be guests. Like, that was their format from the get-go.
Yeah.
And then it became really popular. To be like in the 70s, you're like, call your agent, like, get me on the Muppet Show.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Who did I see on there? And I was like, I can't believe there was like presidential candidates on there.
Oh,
like,
wow. Sock it to me.
Yeah, I can't. Who was it? That's like when Nixon did Laughing
or
whatever.
Right.
Like, it's just that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, yeah. But I was going to say, like, just in the 70s, like, Carol Burnett, that was basically sketch, but it was kind of right. I mean, there was Hee Haw.
Yeah.
There was Carol Burnett. There was like all the format of the variety show, which seemed to go away by the early 80s. I don't know what supplanted it exactly. SNL was running the whole time. I would say SNL is not in that vein of a variety of like a family friendly variety show.
It's not even really a variety show. It's barely a sketch comedy show with musical interludes and a host.
That's the thing, and it's only having people on to promote their new album.
Yeah,
it's not really. I wonder if that was the same for the Muppets. I don't know. Like Linda Ronstadt was like had a new album out, so she did the Muppet show.
Probably,
but I
at
doubt
some point.
This is a series of promotional events, but
yeah,
but probably not in the same way. That machine was different in the 70s for sure than it is now. I feel like there were publicists and stuff, but the cycle is just so different now.
Yeah, I guess the only thing close to a variety show now, maybe sans music or less music, is just like late night shows.
Right,
but even if you look at something like Fallon, he's doing sketches and monologues and music and stand up. He's got a little bit of everything. But.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking more of like the stuff that was on primetime.
Yeah,
you know, like there was sort of this big variety comedy move that I think died off in the 80s, and I don't know, maybe it just was like getting to be redundant or too expensive, or like our ideas of celebrities changed maybe by the 80s. I don't know what it was. Yeah. There was like only, if you think of in the 70s, there was only probably a couple hundred celebrities in total. And now, and this is another thing I was going to say about like when we talk about behind the scenes stuff now, like everyone documents everything now. Everyone has, you know, this culture, I read it somewhere, it's like, it's not surveillance, it's like surveillance. It's like, it's us documenting ourselves. We don't need to worry about someone else, a big brother. We are just putting all of our information out in the world.
Absolutely.
So this is like the switch of like also why having this documentation from this period when not everyone was like that is interesting. But yeah.
Especially as comedians too, like that surveillance thing, we put out individual thoughts like on a shoelace or
giving
like a picket
away the
fence.
Content that we're theoretically trying to get paid for eventually.
Exactly. Yeah. Just handing it out for free. It's just like, we don't even need, like, these guys are giving us target marketing. They're just throwing it at us.
We
like,
all
they
work
don't
for
need
Facebook
it.
And Twitter. Yeah. It's basically what we're doing.
Most people think I'm not funny on Twitter because I'm not funny, but it's really, I'm being not funny on purpose. So I'm not giving away the gold.
You just stay under the radar.
That's just so smart of me.
You don't think I know what I'm doing
I'm
over here?
I'm purposely unfunny.
The long con.
Yeah. I mean, the Muppet Show was such a big part of my, like, I remember once I answered a questionnaire. I did a writing packet, and they were like, what were your earliest comedic influences? And it was the Muppet Show, MASH, David Letterman, and my grandmother. Yeah. Those are like my earliest. And the Muppet Show was definitely like that sense of humor, that wacky, silly, but with that undertone kind of stuff. That's still stuff that I love to write and to watch.
So physical.
Smart and silly, and physical.
The physical stuff, like the karate chopping and like so many explosions.
Yeah.
The explosion ratio on that is like 70-30 to anything else.
They love their pyrotechnics.
And it's so funny to watch. And did Henson touch on that, or was that another thing that I watched where he was saying, he's like, I don't agree with violence in television.
He did say that in this talk,
But he's like, violence in puppets, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I was thinking of something you said about like how it's clean.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the best clean comedy. And maybe that's the other thing relating to like the fact that it's in prime time also.
Yeah. You know? There's like no sexual innuendo. There's
other than a spider.
Yeah.
A pig and a frog.
Yeah. That is like, it's pretty borderline. And even the like veiled drug references of the band.
Right.
But it's stuff that kids are not going to pick up on.
Yeah. That's why it's genius. Like to be able to write that kind of stuff. I mean, that is just absolute genius, you know. Like, I don't know. I think that's, I mean, to watch it again and then, like you were mentioning, catch some of the jokes that you missed as a kid. Like the fact that still resonates. You can watch it still.
Yeah.
I had such a ball watching that documentary. I was like, I actually want to watch an actual Muppet Show.
Yeah.
I was having a moment watching this where I was thinking, maybe the closest person in terms of scope of creation at this point for our generation might be Seth MacFarlane in a completely opposite actual, you know, direction in terms of content.
Yeah.
But in terms of like created multiple hit shows with this kind of universe to it. Like
his own style of humor, his own style of like dialogue
and animation and drawing. And but, you know, but not clean and not really like family friendly and not, you know, Disneyable.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that certainly is. It's weird as our culture has gotten more conservative, but our entertainment's gotten more bawdy, you know.
Mm-hmm. Some of it, but then if you watch like a network show, there's no way that they would touch on topics. They wouldn't. I don't think NBC or ABC or CBS or any of the big ones would even touch anything political or religious.
No.
Or even touch those at all.
Talking about right now or back then?
Right now.
Yeah.
But I think that they would make fun of there was a lot of race stuff, like when the Swedish chef was like trying to put that lobster in the pot, and then just like a bunch
militant crawfish,
militant Mexican crawfish with like bandoliers came. There's no way that would be allowed on television now.
No,
that would be so inflammatory.
Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I mean that's again that's like the difference of the cultures of so here's a question: if the Muppet Show were to be staged and filmed now, it wouldn't be in a theater because nobody goes to theater anymore.
No, nope.
Where do you think they would put it?
What would be the context of it?
What's the environment?
It's a web series that, like someone does in their dorm room with a webcam.
I wouldn't put it past even just to switch it over to like an office with like a big green screen or something like that, like just to make it more current. It depends. If Henson was running it, I think he would only update it minor to suit what was happening now, but I think he would still keep it in the same realm that he always had.
Right.
Behind the scenes.
Cafes are always sitcoms always love cafes.
Cafe, yeah.
They
cafes,
might throw it in a cafe.
Restaurants, bakeries.
Like all the Muppets are in the recession. I mean, that movie does kind of touch on these things too.
That's the thing I like about it is to see it almost makes it more realistic in a sense that it shows, it does show that recession kind of hitting everybody, even like in the entertainment industry and things like that. There were a lot of parts that I liked about the reboot, and then there was most of the parts that I did not care for.
Yeah, I really enjoyed in Muppets and Men, the documentary, the Viking epic scene that they showed
in the Navy, right?
Yeah,
yeah, and doing the village peoples in the Navy, which is also very funny.
And how they said that was months.
A legitimate earthquake happening right now? Breaking either an earthquake or your downstairs neighbor is doing some insane drying.
I think we're having an earthquake.
I think it's an earthquake, folks.
This is a big earthquake.
This is a big earthquake.
Pretty big.
It's going on for a long time.
Let's just take a moment here. This could be the big one, everybody.
It might be too long to be an earthquake.
Yeah, I think it might be their washer downstairs.
Are you sure? Really intense shaking, though.
What was that?
It felt like
an earthquake.
An earthquake.
An earthquake.
An earthquake.
So we're back. It was not an earthquake, thankfully.
Laundry.
It was just laundry.
If you want to see three men scared of laundry, like it's the 50s, you should look at this room. We're all sweating.
That was
funny.
The
puppets here.
I was going to push you guys to the ground and then run on your bodies.
Take them, not me.
Yes. I do want to show you guys something. So I've been an avid record collector my whole life.
Yeah.
My entire life I've been an avid. So the very first album I ever bought.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
My dad had that one.
Was the Muppet Show album that I'm now holding in my hand to these guys.
Scariest Muppet of all times. The Ogre?
Oh, yeah.
Sweetums?
Ogre guy.
What was his name? I never knew.
I know him as Sweetums from the Muppet Frog Prince. Because that's what the lady called him, but I can't remember what his actual name is.
His big face.
He came out during the 3D Muppet Show at Disneyland, which is really, really fun and cool. So they have like a robotic Statler and Waldorf, and then the rest of it is 3D. And then there's like cannons, there's explosions and things like that. But he comes out as a live, real person, and my wife has never seen me so scared in my entire life.
Oh, wow.
Like I like bruised her arm. I grabbed it so hard. I was not a fan of that. It scared the crap out of me.
That
Menomina, that was also like a pretty popular hit.
That one was huge. And again, like so psychedelic, just like a jazzy,
yeah,
a jazzy man.
There's also Fozzie Bear on this does some stand up.
Wow. He's...
And I memorized it when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to do comedy, and I remember, yeah, it's really great. They also do It's Not Easy Being Green, which, what do you think that was originally written for Kermit? Or did they redo that song?
No, I think they wrote that for Kermit. Oh, man, I was crying today because I watched... have you ever watched the Jim Henson, like, funeral, essentially? Carol Spinney, Big Bird, comes out and sings It's Not Easy Being Green. Oh. It was heart-wrenching. I might cry right now. Oh. As Big Bird, yeah, in the Big Bird suit. Oh. Kept it together the whole time, and then right at the end was like, thank you, Kermit. I missed you so much. And then, like, two people had to, like, help Big Bird off the stage. I was dying. I've been crying most of the day watching a lot of Muppet stuff, honestly. Did you ever watch the Jim Henson tribute that they did, the CBS tribute?
No.
That one we had as a kid, and I didn't really... There were two things that I didn't really get as a kid that we had, which number one was a Sesame Street special after Mr. Hooper died. And again, it was Big Bird bumming me out hard, because Big Bird was like... Well, okay, well, I have this card for Mr. Hooper, so I hope he gets better. And they're like, well, he's not. He's not going to get better. He's gone. Oh. And he's like, okay, well, I'll leave it for him when he gets back. And they had to keep telling, like, Big Bird didn't get it for like four or five times. They're like, he won't. Even as a kid, I didn't really get it. And then I watched it, like, in the last couple of years. Oh, my God. That's so heavy.
Wow,
like,
God,
so heavy.
Intense, yeah. What do you, now, getting back to the documentary real quick, what do you wish they would have showed that they didn't? What do you want to know more about behind the scenes?
I actually wish I saw them building more Muppets. They showed a little bit of them kind of in the shop and the eyes and things like that, but I would have loved to see the whole design process, like how they... like how they sew the fabric together and how they build the foam underneath, and like do they mount it to somebody's hand to make sure that it fits properly, or do they just kind of cut in a general section, and like how do they make those eyes? What kind of like glues and things like that? I would really like to see. I would love to go to the Muppet, like the workshop, the actual workshop.
Oh yeah,
I think that would be.
That's in New York.
Yes.
Yeah.
I went to one store and they had like a mini Muppet workshop there, and that was a kind of a fun hour that I spent there.
That'd be
but
cool.
Yeah.
So
what did you see? What did you miss? Anybody?
I guess I wanted to see more of them filming the sketches. I mean, we got to see the Viking one and the couch gag, but I would love to have seen it, seen more of those things, like the actual, you know, working.
Yeah. It was only 52 minutes, so I assume that they put it on, they showed it on television, but yeah, they could have shown me two more hours of that, and I would have been totally fine with it.
Yeah, it would have been cool. Do you have
something, George? Mean, I guess seeing how the writing room worked would have been interesting. They showed a little bit of that, and like I was saying, like, yeah, I didn't realize how much Frank Oz really was a writer on the show. How much everyone who did, how a few people that became major characters had just started as like kind of like puppet interns and became like major characters and writers on the show.
What were they said?
The owner of that character.
Takes a year to be able to be competent at the puppetry, to even be like a background frog.
Yeah.
And then you have to work your way up.
Then you work your way up. Yeah, they showed the guy that does Scooter, and he was saying like this is kind of based on him.
Yeah.
Because he started as a gopher, as
I
a nobody. And
imagine that. Just walking in there and being like, can I work here? And they're like, yeah, okay.
It did also just, it was like, I'm like, this is the best job in the world. I was watching that, and I thought like, I've had some okay jobs, but like if you're going to have even, not even just a job in show business, just like a job like, you made people happy. You worked with your friends. You were like doing creative stuff. Yeah. It was just like this. Even though it was, you know, life sort of cut short, it was like he just won at life, is how it felt watching that. And then I was like really just like thinking about that dynamic of him and Frank Oz.
Yeah.
Because that seems so core to it. And just, going back to that original comedy duo idea.
The one thing I was reading a lot about Henson, and I kind of read like a bummer from his ex-wife. Because she was talking about how into the Muppets that he was is that he didn't really spend a lot of time with his family.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, the reason that the kids really started to play around with Muppets and get into the puppetry was because the only time that you could spend time with him was when he was working.
Oh, wow.
So they would get into it, and it was very hard for them to kind of do that. And it took a while until they got older and good enough at it to continue to be able to spend time with
them. Such a showbiz story. I mean,
yeah.
That,
right?
Yeah.
But guess what, Brian?
Don't fuck this up, Brian. I don't. We're all looking at the computer like he's on Skype for some reason.
I'm just like, your career has been made. I mean, like, yeah, like, why would you want it? I mean, yes. His relationship, he's probably had a lot of weird social issues because he was a puppeteer to start with.
Yeah.
The fact that he had kids and got married. Like, yeah, that's going to be secondary. He created an empire of, like, you know, positivity in the world.
That's the thing, is he helps so many other kids, it's hard to imagine that he didn't get to spend any time with his own kids.
Yeah.
I think that is the dark side of the Muppets.
I think we found it.
I think we did it.
I think we found the dark side of the Muppets. Congratulations, guys.
Hey, guys, we did it. So, at the very least, I feel accomplished.
Yeah.
I feel very accomplished.
So one question I've asked each person we've talked to at the end is, could you share either, not the best, but a favorite documentary of yours that you would recommend to the listeners, and or the gateway documentary, a documentary that you saw that got you into watching documentaries?
I think I really like the Being Elmo documentary, as well as whatever the controversy is behind it now, or whatever has come out in light since. And I also think that we touched on it before, but I don't know if it got cut or not. The voice documentary, I know that voice documentary. Yeah. I think what I really like to see is behind the scenes of things that I love, and see the process behind it, and the people that created it.
Right.
So I think those two are really two that I would recommend.
Right on. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Hollywood Forever Cemetery in L.A.?
No, I've never been yet.
That's where Mel Blanc is buried?
Yeah.
Have you seen Mel Blanc's tombstone?
No, what does it say? I've read what it says on it, and it has all of the characters, right?
It has all the characters, and they're bowing their head.
Oh, it says, man. That's all, folks.
Oh, that, oh man. How do you... That's...
Makes me wonder what Seth MacFarlane's grave is going to look like.
It's just a cutaway to someone else's grave. <You're right. laughs> And then it says pussy.
Thanks, John Schauble.
Thanks for having me.
You can follow comedian John Schauble on Twitter at jschauble.
And of course, our Twitter is supdocpodcast. Our website is www.supdocpodcast.com. And please listen to us on iTunes, subscribe, rate, and review.
Our theme music is by David Siegel, and our producer is Will Scovel.
If you have a doc you would like us to talk about, or a person you would like us to talk to, please email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.